Everything in my culture tells me that I deserve to win and I deserve to be right. And we just keep going back to this story of where the night before he was betrayed, Jesus walked away from his privilege and his position at the head of the table and didn't just move down one, but he walked all the way down the table to the last place and took that place as a servant and said, do as I do. And so I feel like just practically saying, how can I take last place, helps break me and my kids of this idea that I always should be first.
You're listening to the Upside Down Podcast,
a place for unscripted conversations
on life and faith.
Join us as we discuss what it looks like
when Jesus turns our lives upside down.
Hi, welcome to Upside Down, a podcast of unscripted conversations on life and faith. I'm your host this week, Shannon Evans, and joining me are Lindsay Wallace and Kayla Craig, my usual co-hosts. And we have a special guest co-host today, Diana Oestreich. Hi, Diana.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
Hello.
Yeah, so Diana is from, works for a Preemptive Love Coalition, which is a global movement of peacemakers changing the way we engage the world's most polarizing conflicts by confronting fear with acts of love. So super cool organization and a really cool lady. We're super excited to have her with us.
Yeah.
Do you want to add anything more about specifically what you do, Diana?
Well, I feel like you just said the most interesting thing that we do. And so anything adding on to that is going to be a little.
Well, you as an individual, what do you say you do? What's your job description?
Yeah. So I primarily call myself a peacemaker. And so I'm engaging people in the conversation and asking, how can we move towards the people that we're told to fear? And how can we make new stories by choosing to love the person in front of us instead of distrust them? And so I live in the States and my team lives in Iraq. And so I get to primarily do it with people in America and tell stories from Iraq of how peacemaking can happen even in the middle of violence, that we don't have to wait for the violence to stop to start repairing things. So I get to do it here with people who can see the connection between there and here. And also I get to talk to a lot of our donors, which is incredible to hear stories of peacemakers from every different type, every state, every different type of church. It's just incredible the people I get to talk to on a weekly basis.
That must be a really nice job to have. Well, I was about to say it probably gives you hope for humanity, but I'm sure you get plenty of the opposite as well. But
well, hopefully really, because I usually get to talk to people who already want to be part of the peacemaking conversation and they believe that we can unmake violence, I kind of get all encouragement. It's all people who are stepping into it. So yeah, it really is the job that gives me the encouragement to keep walking it out in my daily life.
That's awesome. So you might not be surprised after hearing that little bit from Diana, but on this episode 27 of Upside Down Podcast, we are talking about peacemaking and what that looks like in our day-to-day lives and on a global scale. Lindsay, you had said something that I thought was really helpful in differentiating or explaining exactly what we're talking about. Do you know what I mean? Do you remember what I said?
Maybe about the difference between being a peacekeeper and a peacemaker?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've just been thinking about this and like, to be honest, some of my thoughts have been spurred on by Preemptive Love and the work that they're doing. But I think maybe, I don't know if this is cultural because I've never left the United States, but I think at least my experience has been that we tend to keep peace, which is kind of like this, like, roll over, be very accommodating, be kind, be nice, don't like rock the boat. And to me, that's peacekeeping, which in some situations is fine and well. But what in the Beatitudes, what Jesus says is blessed are the peacemakers. And I think that peacemaking is a much grittier, more difficult get your hands dirty kind of thing. And so it's something that actually has to be, and I was doing a little bit of research today, and someone that I was reading said that the actual more literal translation of the Beatitude word is peace worker. And I think that gives us a better like visual picture for what Jesus was talking about. And hopefully we'll get into this more, but I think when you look at Jesus's life, like, he rocked the boat big time. You know what I mean? Like, he was constantly speaking truth to power and subverting what culture thought was normal and elevating women in society and doing all of these things that, like, nobody looked at that and said, like, oh, this guy's keeping the peace. This must be the Prince of Peace. Like, that's not what people thought, you know? So I think there's just a big difference between what the Bible says a peacemaker is, and then our interpretation has become this very passive, like, oh, let's keep the peace, let's, you know, whatever.
Kayla, do you have any thoughts to add on that?
I mean, I completely agree. I think that when we even, like, what comes to mind when you think I'm a peaceful person? Like, what do you guys think of when you think of that? Like, do you think of somebody who is on the front lines, like choosing to love even when it's hard, or have hard conversations about injustice? Or do you see someone like frolicking through the fields with flowers in her hair, you know?
Right.
Mm. And maybe you could do both, you know, that'd be great. But I don't think peacemaking is this like navel gazing, like, tra-la-la, I'm not going to say anything, I don't want to rock the boat. I don't think that's what peacemaking is.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know what background you guys grew up in, but I grew up in a conservative Baptist small country church, and I remember just the word peacemaking was kind of looked with suspicion and looked down on. Mm. And the idea of peace people were like hippie dippies who just don't understand sacrifice and really don't understand God. So I came from a background where it was really looked down on. It was not something that we saw as a primary character and nature of Jesus. That when he came, he announced himself. He claimed the title as the Prince of Peace. Mm-hmm. And so when I think about it, when I ask other Christians, I'm like, well, if Jesus calls himself the Prince of Peace, you know, how are you and I reflecting his character of being a peacemaker? And I find most people don't have an answer because we haven't associated ourselves with being a peacemaker and with God. I mean, if you ask me, how do you love like Jesus? It's like, well, I do this and this and this, but I feel like there's been a disconnect by even accepting that being an active peacemaker is a central part of God's character when he introduced Jesus to the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you see, Diana, when you're talking to people, and Shannon and Lindsay chime in too, but this idea of, well, we're supposed to be unified, because I've had people, multiple people, multiple times say, well, we're supposed to be unified as a church. So with you bringing this up, like, I think you're just causing division, and we're supposed to be unified. Has that happened to you guys?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And another interesting thing is that oftentimes when people have questions about, well, what do you really mean about being a peacemaker, and isn't this divisive? What they end up getting down to is they feel like their allegiance to a group or to an idea or even to their own family is being tugged on when you bring up an issue and say, no, you know, there's no violence in heaven. So if we're kingdom people pulling in, you know, the things that happen in heaven where God gets his way all the time, then I'm going to talk about violence right now. Mm-hmm. So I find that people push back because it tugs on their allegiance, which is really interesting.
That is very interesting. I was thinking, Kayla, as you asked that question, that Jesus was divisive. like Jesus was incredibly divisive. I mean, he would walk into a room and you would, I mean, I can almost picture it just reading stories about like the Pharisees on one side and then the tax collectors and the prostitutes and the, you know, the marginalized on the other side. I mean, he was constantly asking like incredibly divisive questions or telling these parables where people are like, that dude's crazy. No way we're following him. And then you have this other group of people who literally leave everything they have, including their families, mm-hmm. to follow him. So it's, I think Diana's point is really interesting about the allegiance, but I think it reminds me of that quote that has been attributed to Shane Claiborne. I don't think he's the first person who ever said it, but that the gospel comforts the disturbed and disturbs the comforted. And when you're really like put face to face with like the actual lived life of Jesus, it, and you're living a different lifestyle that feels really comfortable, like that sucks, you know? And so I don't know, I was just thinking like Jesus was super divisive. And so that argument, I don't know, it just needs to be picked apart. And the Bible does that really quickly.
Diana, I would love to hear a little bit more about your personal experience. Because you have military background. Were you Army?
I signed up to the Army National Guard when I was 17, and I served 8 years, around 8 years.
Wow.
I know, right? 17 sounds so... so young. And so I ended up getting called up to go to the Iraq War when I was 23 years old at the tail end. Like, I had already served 6 years. I was pretty much done. And then I got called up to be part of the preemptive strike in 2003, where they just did a huge show of force and troop surge without actually declaring war.
Okay.
And so I had just grown up in a really God, guns, and country type of faith and type of family. And almost everybody in my family was a veteran. It really was our common denominator, and it spoke a lot of our allegiance to each other.
No.
And so in my faith community.
That's such a good point. Yeah.
And so I had a pretty Saul to Paul experience. So I went over, and I was a combat medic, and so I think I did kind of skirt a lot of the reality of what it would mean for me, because a medic's primary mission is to preserve life, limb, or eyesight on the battlefield, and it goes for everyone, enemy, civilian, American soldier, like anyone. So I think
I actually didn't know that. But I didn't know that that meant you could help anyone.
It's actually part of the rules of engagement.
Okay.
Which has so many implications for so many things that are happening with police brutality in our country. When we're like, well, soldiers have a set of rules that you save every life. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter where they are. Like, that's what we do in the middle of a war.
Right. Mm. But we don't do it in the middle of our streets.
No. Wow. So I had walked in believing pretty much everything that you could think of. And when I got there, one of the first nights, we were going to convoy into the active war zone. And the sergeant had said that it was an enemy tactic to push little children in front of our trucks in order to stop the convoy, and then they would attack soldiers at the last truck in the convoy.
Wow.
And he said, I hope you understand your duty to keep the convoy rolling at all costs tomorrow.
Oh my gosh.
And if anyone isn't able to do their duty and protect their battle buddy by running over a child, stand up now and identify yourself.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
I just have chills all over my body.
I think I'm just going to go cry right now.
What did you do?
I just froze. I just froze. And I was the only female in my company of 100 soldiers. And you can't, there's a double standard.
Absolutely.
And it's a vulnerable position. And I just froze. And I remember going back to my tent, and I had basically 10 hours until the next morning when the convoy started. I remember just telling God, like, I have to. I have to take a life to save a life. And I just remember he just kept whispering to me, but I love them, Diana. Mm-hmm. I love them too.
Oh, man.
And he wouldn't shut up. Like, and I was like, you don't He's understand so pesky God. Like that. I'm like, I'm wearing a uniform. I signed up for this. I believe in this. I believe in taking a life for my country. And my whole faith, like my whole church was like cheering me on. Like, I'm like, you don't understand God. Like, I have to. And in fact, if I don't, this could be really dangerous for me. Because I wasn't a conscientious objector. I didn't even know what that was at the time. And so all night long, I kept saying, but I have to. And he kept saying, but I love them, Diana. And so by the morning, all I knew was that everything I believed in, God was telling me. He was just telling me, don't take a life, Diana. Don't take a life. And so despite everything in my military training and my beliefs and what my church believed and my family believed and all my allegiances, I just knew that I was a citizen of the kingdom of heaven first. Mm. And said to lay down my weapon and like give my life and not take a life, then he's the one I was going to meet and I was going to obey him first. And so that was kind of the beginning of the unraveling. and I was for over a year, but that was the beginning where I walked in one way and then God just started taking the gun out of my hand again and again and again. So I can tell that longer story later, but that's really the beginning of my peacemaking journey, is when God asked me to lay down my weapon in the sand and commit to giving my life, stand in front of a bullet for anyone, Iraqi, American, whoever, but I would never take a life because God had made life. And I had grown up knowing that life is sacred and only God could decide when to take it. And this is, I just really believed it when I grew up. And we were told pro-life means that life is sacred and God gets to decide and we don't.
Right. Right.
That was my beginning of my peacemaking conversion.
Wow. Well, so I just have to ask, so the next day you woke up and what happened?
No kid got pushed in front of my truck and so I didn't have to make a decision. But here is what where I'm at today, the biggest thing that I believe to be true about the difference between peacekeeping, which is appeasing the biggest, scariest, loudest person in the room.
Ooh, versus, that's a really good way to describe it.
Yeah.
Versus peacemaking is, I think Jesus made a commitment that he was going to give his life for his enemies to the death. And I feel like what changed for me was when I made a commitment ahead of time that it didn't matter who that person was. It didn't matter whether they were worthy or not. It didn't matter whether they wanted something good for me or if they wanted to take my life. Like, I had decided ahead of time that I would walk the way of Jesus and I would give and not take. And I think that's where I feel like choosing to be a peacemaker has this incredible ability to reflect God's extravagant love for us and his kingdom, is if we're willing to commit to something. And for each person, that might be something different. That was just me. And it took a war for me to like let God rearrange my story. So everybody else is way ahead of me. They don't need to go to war, but I did.
Gosh, and I'm just like, thinking, what?
Yeah.
I'm just so glad. Like, I'm so glad to have you here. And I just, like, my jaw's on the ground. Full disclosure, but I'm so glad for you to be sharing your story for our listeners, too. Because I just, I mean, it's one thing, like, for me to say I'm a peacemaker, but for someone who, like, life and death had to make that decision, like, in Iraq, like that's a commitment on a level that I've never had to have tested, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Mm. So I was going to direct this at Diana, but for all of you, like, how, Diana, when you were like 23 years old, I guess,
which you guys are old enough to know, that's a baby.
It is such a baby. I know.
But so,
So how has that mentality translated to just like having a regular old life? I mean, you do have this incredible job, but probably for the most part, your life looks pretty like ordinary, I would assume. And ours certainly do. How do you guys kind of bring the idealism of peacemaking into just the nitty gritty day to day boring life?
Yeah, I feel like maybe Iraq was the sexy part of my story, but I personally feel like when I came back from Iraq, it wasn't about figuring out how to close the chapter on that part of my life. It really was a desperate wrecked woman who wanted to learn how I'm going to live out the rest of my life. Like,
yeah.
Now I know what I'm not going to do, but like, I had no idea what to do. Like, I didn't have anybody in my life or a faith leader or anybody. Like, I'm like, well, what now?
Yeah.
I laid down my weapon, but I didn't know what to pick up. I didn't have a posture to live out my life. And so I came back, got married to the guy who stuck by me, had two kids. And so basically the years of potty training is when, like, I really worked through.
Your nonviolence is tested. I'm right there.
Yeah, there's so much time that you're sitting there. And because I have two little boys, and boys just tend to be fascinated with guns, and I couldn't shirk the questions that I think a lot of parents can, because they knew I knew. They're like, what's war, Mom? What do guns do? And I couldn't just be like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah, change the subject.
I really had to talk about what violence is. And if someone's made in the image of God, then that means that their life is more important than mine, at least. And so I feel like the answer is it's just given me a lens that when my kids and I do life, we are looking to listen to the people that are saying they're hurting. We're looking that when people in our community say, hey, something happened and we're mourning, we're like, okay, we're there. Like this posture of saying, I choose you, even before I see you, has rearranged our priorities. It's changed how we love. And because we've decided ahead of time that we're going to move towards somebody who isn't like us, and we're actually going to move towards somebody who we're told to fear, like, we can just spend our energy getting there instead of debating, well, is this our thing? Are they worthy of being listened to? Do I really agree? Like, we've taken agreement off the table that we're gonna love because we've decided to love the way Jesus loves. And so I think that peacemaking is really messy, and I've been criticized, and it's been harder for me as a peacemaker than it's ever been as a soldier. I've gotten nothing but but positive responses for being a soldier. But when I say I'm a peacemaker, and really I'm a soldier and a peacemaker, and they come from the same place, and it's this desire to show up and partner with God to remake something that's broken. I feel like that's what my kids have decided to do. If there's something broken in our community, then we're just going to show up. Mm-hmm. And that's how it kind of gets walked out in our daily life.
Lindsay, as she was talking, it was making me wonder how much of that resonated with you in your, you know, being in a marginalized community and being really intentional with the relationships that you have. Does that resonate a lot?
It resonates a lot. It's interesting. I agree 100% with everything that she said, but it's interesting, as she was talking, I was actually thinking like closer to home in terms of how being a peacemaker plays out for me personally right now. And even more closer, like within my home. And one of the things that Diana said was, we've already decided to love. Like, we made this decision, so it doesn't matter. Like, all those other things come off the table because we've already decided. And you guys know we're having a lot of struggles with one of our kiddos right now who has some special behavioral and mental health needs. And it's just been a really difficult season, and he has run away. He's threatened to run away. He tells me often that he hates me and he wants a new family, and all of these things are really, really difficult. And so I feel like for me personally right now, being a peacemaker is following through with that commitment and that decision that I made that I'm going to love this kid. And it's not contingent upon his response to me or his return of my investment on that love. Like, he's not, like necessarily responding that he loves me back. Like, sometimes he won't even look me in the eye, but like, I have already decided and committed to love this kid. And so that's like how I'm working out in my personal life right now. Like, I'm being a peacemaker by loving this child that God put in our home and in our family. And that's like just as big and scary and hard as like Preemptive Love's tagline, which is loving across enemy lines. And so I think like there's probably people listening who are like, I don't have a war story. I didn't go to Iraq. And like, I don't either. But I think like Jesus is just as pleased that I'm desperately trying to like love the life back into this kid in my home as he is that Diana chose to lay her life down instead of taking the life of somebody else, you know? So,
amen. Well said, girl.
Yeah, so it looks really different. And I mean, I could tell you stories about like gunshots in my community and my husband giving up his gun, and like that sounds really like woo, you know, but like, to be honest, I'm just trying to love this kid that says he hates me every day. And that's just, you know, like that's just where we are, and that's it's just as good, you know.
Lindsay, I have tingles with your story. And secondly, the thing that you're doing like makes me want to weep, because that's like believing and seeing that something broken can be rebuilt. I feel like is that whole thing that Jesus said, that he's renewing all things, and you can see in this little boy past the broken parts to say, no, I see you, and I'm going to stand beside you until you're completely remade. Like, my heart knows it's possible for you. And I feel like that is the heart of, that's the heart of peacemaking, is that you're willing to sit with somebody and say, everybody gets to have what they need to thrive. And until everybody's at the table having what they need to thrive, I'm going to keep working my butt off. Yeah. And that's peacemaking. And we do it with our kids, and we do it with our friends. We do it with a really hard person.
Who sometimes is our kid.
Or your husband.
Right, you know? Exactly.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah. And I struggle so much with the wanting the big sexy stories, Diana, like you were saying, Lindsay, I just felt like you were like preaching to me. I was like, keep talking, because it is so hard to let go of that big idea of what impact on the world looks like, of what being a peacemaker in the world looks like, and just let it come down to the people that God has put closest to you in your life, you know. And some of us will go beyond that and have a greater impact, but it has to start there, or it's not real, you know.
And so
that really impacted me. Thank you, I needed to hear that. Okay, I have a switching gears. It could possibly be an interesting conversation, but what about online? How we're all online, you know. So how do you approach peacemaking? You haven't chimed in for a while, but like, how do you navigate that on social media or just in whatever online sphere you're in?
Well, I think I've shared this before maybe, but I don't fight with strangers on the internet. So like, if I don't know you, I'm not going to fight with you. And that's like just a general rule that I have, because I learned the hard way. And also I think like There's a Maya Angelou quote about, like, once you show me who you are, like, I'm gonna believe you. And so if someone has proven themselves to be a listener and a learner and genuinely engaged in the conversation, whatever it is, they, you know, like, they're doing their work and they're trying to learn more about something and they're educating themselves, then I'll engage in a conversation. But if you've shown me that, like, you just want to be mean and you just want to be hateful, or, like, the tone or whatever, I tend to not engage those people. Because it just doesn't end well. And typically they've already made up their mind about whatever, you know, the thing is. So I think it's helpful, like, because social media is so, there's, like, this immediate, there's the instant gratification, there's, like, dopamine going off in our brain when our phone's ding, like, so it's helpful for me to have these sort of guidelines beforehand so that I know, mm-hmm. like, okay, I'm not going to engage that person at all. And then if it is somebody that I'm going to engage, I think asking questions is really helpful instead of assuming I know the direction that person's going to go.
Mm-hmm. So if, but like you said, you don't fight with strangers on the internet. Like if it's somebody that you know who is not open to another point of view, but still provokes you on the internet, do you respond to them if you know them in real life?
If I know them in real life, yes, but I'll generally say, like, let's actually have a real conversation. Like, there are some conversations that aren't internet conversations.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Mm-hmm. It's a hard lesson to learn.
Yeah, I learned the hard way, for sure.
Yeah.
I've had a little learning experience with social media, and a little bit more so because of my background, that I have trauma from the war, and my peacemaking story came with wounds that I still have today. And so when people sometimes engage, like, it costs them nothing, but yeah. I'm still the same person and my wounds hurt. Mm. So
I'm so glad you said that.
It's hard. And I wish I had thicker skin. I'm like, oh man, I wish I could just really get in there sometimes with people. But what I've done on social media at times is I just literally tell myself not to look. Like, if reading this is making me devalue the person who's writing it mm-hmm. with my thoughts,
oh, that's good.
Then I'm like, man, I can't be a peacemaker when this stuff is roiling inside of me. And so I feel like the most peace creating commitment I can do is say, I'm not going to read anymore mm-hmm. of this comment.
Yes, that's and so good.
There's even people that maybe a couple of years ago I would have followed faith leaders, and now I'm just gawking because I cannot believe they're saying this. They're saying, I'm like, you know what? If I am saying that I want to have something good in my heart for this person, and if reading their status updates and their opinions is making that double hard for me, then I'm purposely unfollowing things mm-hmm. that I'm like, man, I don't need it to be twice as hard to find something to stand beside that person and champion and say, you've got great things too.
Diana, that just reminds me of, like, the fruits of the spirit, you know, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, self-control, right? Is that right?
Yeah.
So good. My kids' fruits of the spirit song is paying off.
I was thinking the same thing.
That's a fruit of the spirit, right? You're having self-control, like, you're having peace. Like, just because, I don't know, we're not obligated to, like, go on Twitter and let everyone know our thoughts.
Right.
You know, even though we might have leaders in our country that do that, that doesn't mean we have to, you know, we don't have to have the scroll. Like, we don't have to do that. We are called to be peacemakers, but we're not called to be Facebook warriors.
Right.
So
preach.
Tweet that.
Preach. I've heard so many people, and rightly so, just say, if you want, like, if you believe in something, you have to do something more than like and share a post.
Yes.
Like, we need to show up for each other, and we need to show up with integrity for ourselves, that lives with the people that these things are affecting and not separated behind. And I'm just chewing on that and wondering how that can change culture.
Yeah.
But do you guys think that there is a place for, like, cries for justice on social media, or do you think it's best to leave that to day-to-day life?
Well, I think if anybody follows any of us, they see that we
have I was going to say, do you follow us on Instagram, Shannon? You know? That was the layup. That was the setup.
Yeah.
I just made a sports reference. Sorry.
I know. I was just like, do we just have a sports reference on the Upside Down podcast?
I really like sports. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Shannon, I feel like I've heard you say before that, like, people will just make general comments like, oh, the internet never changed anyone's mind. But I feel like I've heard you say you have read articles or blog posts that have, like, really challenged your way of thinking about things and, like, caused you to see things in a different light. And so,
yeah, they absolutely did. And like, when we were in the adoption process and I was kind of preparing, you know, to raise a black son, and I'm like, I know that there are things that I don't know. But and this was a different time. This was before, you know, social media was really booming, and so the Black Lives Matter movement hadn't started, and, like, privileged white people didn't know a lot of how bad it really was or what the black experience in America was really like. We're thankfully having our eyes open now. But reading, like, just blogs about the racial experience in America for African Americans helped me. Like, it really did change my mind. And granted, yeah. I was open to being taught, you know, right. I think that is a requirement. And, like, somebody specified, like, either, you know, some people prove that they're not interested in learning or being open to someone else's experience. But yeah, you know, I actually just wrote a blog post this week, and somebody's comment I'm so jaded at this point that I actually thought it was a joke at first, but she was like, wow, I was one of those people with a plank in my eye, and now I see it differently. Thank you. And I, you know, support specific thing. I mean, it was so genuine and so beautiful. And, like, I was like, Lord bless this person. She is, like, one of the pure of heart who will see God, you know, like, she was just you know, and so I always kind of like to push back on that, because it is easy to be jaded and to think that no one's going to be changed by an internet post. But I can say I have been, and I've had people comment that they have been through things that
me
I've
too.
And just throwing it out there, but Preemptive Love is an entirely online community. You know, we live and work in Iraq, but our donors are primarily from America, and that's because they're engaging on the internet with us. And so I think that's incredible that people can be impacted, people can feel invited, people can be like, oh no, I am Preemptive Love and I'm a peacemaker, because they feel empowered by a blog post or by someone inviting them or empowering them to love their neighbor.
And I think you guys do a really great job with, like, with the storytelling aspect and being an entirely online organization and group of people. Like, I don't see how people could watch the videos or read the posts and not feel a sense of connection to those people that you're serving. I feel like in a lot of ways the internet, you know, can be a very divisive place, but I feel like at times is holy ground, because it gives us the opportunity. We have a window into the life of women in Syria. Like, how in the world would I have ever have been able to see what their lives are like without the internet, you know?
Yeah. And I think at its best, the internet is giving us this, it's just satisfying this ache that we really are the family of God, and we're incomplete without each other, and we feel incomplete without actually knowing the mother in Syria and without actually knowing the African American experience. So I think in some, like, crazy cotton candy and moonbeam ways, we get a little slice of that heaven-like family togetherness that's really in us that we ache for. And then at the same time, it can be like, wow, the family's real messy. Because I think people are just being themselves. Like, yeah. I really just think if I had to be in a room with 100 people who felt free to be themselves, it would probably be a little traumatic.
Right. Yeah.
That's very true.
Diana, something that really draws me into preemptive love is this idea that peace is not a partisan platform, but peace transcends everything. Like, this is the way of Jesus. This is the kingdom of God. This isn't right or left, Republican or Democrat, but this is like this new way. And I don't know, like, we live in this time, and in America, especially right now, we're just turning on each other all the time with everything. And we have our talking points, and that's like what we push and we push and we push. And that is not peaceful. Like, this fighting, it's like, I think somebody maybe even on our Instagram, our Upside Down Podcast Instagram, mentioned like just the violence of our words. The words that we choose with each other are so violent. And that brings me back thinking social media too. It's like I can have the same point and carry it out two very different ways. And I have at different times. And I see that when I try to be thoughtful and not reactive in my words, but try to maybe like tell a story or really like ask Jesus into what I'm saying, or if I just go and I'm like, this is so messed up, and I start yelling and I start fighting, that's where my violence creeps in. And then I'm not showing Jesus to anybody, and I'm really just causing more strife and more like ache on my own heart. And I don't know. I think their violence creeps in so many different aspects of our lives.
Yeah, absolutely. Kayla, that reminds me, I've been reading this book. I started it this summer and I'm not all the way through it yet, but it's called Nonviolent Communication. And it's by Marshall B. Rosenberg. And it is blowing my mind because I've thought that I'm a really healthy communicator. I feel like I do a really good job kind of, you know, filtering my words and thinking of how the best way to say things. But it's made me realize like how much damage I do when I think that I'm even communicating well, but primarily by not seeking to understand the person that I'm talking to, but just like wanting to be heard myself. Right. Anyway, so it's really impacting my marriage and the way that I talk and listen to my husband, and he's reading it too. And so it's nice that we're reading it together, because we're kind of trying to learn to implement it together. But it's just, again, like another way of starting small, starting in your interpersonal relationships, changing the things that you can control. I mean, we can't control what's happening in Syria, but we can control how we're speaking to our neighbors or the people on the internet who are not loving, you know, or just the way that we're communicating, even what our ideas of peace are sometimes can be off-putting. And sometimes they just are because they are, but sometimes they are because of the way that we're saying them or presenting them. Anyway, so that book is just something I wanted to throw out there to listeners, because it was a really great resource.
Yeah, we'll try to give that a shout out on Instagram as well. So if you haven't written it down as you're listening, you can find us online and get it that way. Yeah. That sounds like a great book that I should read. I have a question, if I can ask. So we kind of talked a little bit about this, but really tangible ways to be peacemakers in our everyday life. Like, we kind of mentioned, you know, some things, but what if we're thinking about everyone who's listening, and we have listeners that run the gamut, men, women, parents, single people, kind of all across denominations, all across like big cities, small towns. We have listeners in other countries. So when we're talking here, I would love to be able to provide some tangible things that we can do daily. You know, like Shannon, like you said, just even how we talk, you know, to a significant other or people in our sphere. You know, Lindsay mentioned, you know, just being intentional about loving a child in a really hard situation. And Diana mentioned like showing up to our community. Mm-hmm. And so I was thinking, and I would love for you guys to kind of add your thoughts too, but this is something that feels really like simple, and but it makes some people really mad that we, I don't know, just offended maybe, I don't know, that we don't have guns in our house. Like, we don't have play guns in our house for my boys. And we've had, you know, family members that have like rolled their eyes, or they've been like, why don't you have guns? Like, little boys want to play with guns. But that's just like a really simple thing, is that we're just like, you know, we just tell our kids that guns can hurt people. And so we, you know, those are real things, Diana, kind of like what you were saying. And so we don't have those. There are some shows that we don't watch. And I mean, my kids watch Star Wars, so we're not, we are nowhere, you know, enlightened or anything, but there are some certain shows that we don't watch, some games that we don't play. What are some other ways that we can just kind of start enacting kind of this way of peace in our lives?
Yeah. Mm. One of the things that we are just hashing out every day is that when we cross each other in my family, we're like, hey, you know, you just put your hands on the image of God, like calling us back to this idea mm-hmm. that God made us. Mm-hmm. And so you are answerable to God that you just whacked your brother. Like, not only is he my son, but he's God's son. And just mm-hmm. trying to reframe the narrative that keeps telling us that we're entitled to do things to each other. We're entitled to speak about each other mm-hmm. in really demeaning ways. And so mm-hmm. I feel like we're just trying to, and me, you know, practically trying to reorder my brain, because everything in my culture tells me that I deserve to win and I deserve mm-hmm. to be right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we just keep going back to the story of where the night before he was betrayed, Jesus walked away from his privilege and his position at the head of the table, and didn't just move down one, but he walked all the way down the table to the last place mm-hmm. and took that place as a servant and said, do as I do. And so I feel like just practically saying, how can I take last place, helps break me and my kids of this idea that I always should be first. Mm-hmm. Little things, big things. So I just think it's a really practical but really hard thing to practice, of like, oh, I'll go last. Oh, I'll let everybody walk in the door in front of me. Oh, let me, you know, be last in the game we're playing. Because it sounds simple, but it is a serious hard one. Yeah. To like, it changes the way I think. And it's, I don't know, it's been pretty pretty hard, but I think worthwhile.
Mm-hmm. When you say that about the door, I have a 7-year-old who always holds the door open and lets everyone go through before he does. And I've always thought it was really sweet, but now hearing you talk about that, I'm like, that's not just like sweet. That's him reflecting Jesus, you know, like that is such a beautiful picture for me. So I'm glad that you said that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I also think that we don't applaud people for putting themselves last. We applaud people for achieving. And so I think just to change my kids' view, to mm-hmm. champion and cheer on, oh no, what you did, that was really courageous. It's hard to let everybody else get in the car first, or, you know, right. I feel like I want to champion that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's really good. This is Lindsay. And I think for me, the work that I do in our community is, I hate to use the word activism, but that really is, I guess, what it is, in working with, folks who don't have access to safe housing, and, using my privilege and leveraging my availability and tool of being annoying. It's getting them seats at tables with city commissioners and county commissioners, and, just sitting alongside my neighbors. And so I think for me, being a peacemaker means believing that there's a place at the table and there's a place in the kingdom for the oppressed and the oppressor, because I will champion the rights of the oppressed all day long. And I can talk to anybody. I can see the image of God in the oppressed with no problem. But when it's the oppressor and I have to like have a meeting with the city commissioner or go to a city council meeting, it's much more difficult for me to see those in power and those who are, you know, in some way oppressing my neighbors. Like, it's a lot harder for me to be a peacemaker with those people and deciding to love those people. Yeah. But they were also made in the image of God, right? So it's not, right. I don't get to decide like, oh, I don't have to be peaceful with them or I don't have to be loving to them. I still do, even mm-hmm. when speaking truth to power in that way.
Yes. That rings true to me a lot too, Lindsay, is the people that I have the hardest time extending love and compassion to are the ones who are usually the more powerful, and like siding with those on the margins comes more naturally to me. But mm-hmm. but like I do, like you said, have to kind of constantly bring myself back to like, this person is an image of God too, and this person also has a lot of woundings and probably a lot of sad things in their life,
right,
that formed them to be this way. You
I'm
know?
Glad you said that, Shannon, because that was, I've been talking with my kids, like if somebody hits you on the playground, like we don't hit them back. And maybe why is a reason that somebody might hit, like maybe somebody hit them, or maybe there's a lot of other violence going on in their home. You know what I mean? Like
right.
teaching our kids to extend that forgiveness is, I don't know. Like, there's part of me that's like, if anybody touches my baby or is like a jerk to my kid,
yeah,
you know, like there's
can't friend me.
Yeah, the mama bear. You know what I mean? But I'm trying mm-hmm. to live that out in my own life too.
Yeah. Well, guys, I think we should probably wrap this episode up. But I have enjoyed this so much. I'm like eating it up. We could talk for another hour. But Diana, thank you so much for joining us. You just brought such a richness to this conversation.
Yes,
well,
thank you.
Well, I just wanted to thank you guys because I've been so encouraged on my journey of speaking up and choosing peace, even when it's hard, by each one of your examples. So I'm just really grateful. Yes, the internet is crazy, but I feel like you three have really encouraged me and by you just walking your walk. So... three cheers to you guys.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Hey, should we give our listeners a hint of what's coming next?
Yeah, do it.
All right. So stay tuned because Diana is so awesome. She is joining us at the table again for our next episode. And we're going to be talking in a similar vein. We're going to be talking about something that I think is on the minds of a lot of us here in the United States right now, as we think about just our current culture and political context and the upside down kingdom. And we're going to be talking about when nationalism becomes an idol. So we're really excited. Let us know like what you thought of today's episode. And now I'm taking over Shannon's hosting duties, but
you're good. I'm just getting back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let us know what you thought. You can find us Facebook group, just request to join, and we would love to include you for some good conversation with some other awesome people who are doing their best to be peacemakers in this world and following Christ. It's Upside Down Tribe on Facebook. You can also like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram to kind of keep up with what's going on in the podcast. And we're also going to start doing some, the notes from the episode will just be in the Instagram caption. And so everything you need to know will be right there. You don't even have to go to the website for that. So we look forward to getting to know you better if you're a new listener. And if you're an old one, thanks for being on our, I don't know, team. Sorry.
Two sports.
Second sports champion.
If you're a new listener, welcome. And if you're an old listener, thank you for sticking around. We'll see you guys later.
Yay.